time to tell the neighbors that Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is home.
Okay, we're back once again with Fred Malone, and Fred's got a lot of interesting things for us today. Fred, the Mohawk Historical Society has, they must have a large group of volunteers also.
Well, you know, there's a good core group of volunteers with the Mohawk Historical Society, but, you know, the membership is unreal. We have over 550 members throughout 48 states. So, I mean, it's unreal. Yeah,
that is
the membership.
Unreal.
Yeah. And, of course, one of the things that we do, if you're over 80, you don't pay any membership anymore. You get your membership
right.
for free, which certainly helps keep people, although membership fees are only $10.
And the newsletter is
Well worth the $10. You get that six times a year. So
that's a great amount of history every time that comes out.
It is. It really is. But they have a big event going on. Let's see, the 21st. Is that tomorrow or today?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow's
the
21st. I think I said earlier today was the 21st. Today's the 20th.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, the 21st, they have an event going on up at the Melmore Town Hall, which was the old opera house that the Historical Society purchased a few years ago when the trustees, Eden Township trustees, decided to build a new building. This event will be held tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Now, there may not be any seats left for this because the newsletter has been out now for a few weeks, and you needed to make reservations for a seat. But the group is called Living Water, and they're a gospel group who spreads the good news through music for the glory of God and the benefit of His church. They perform at area churches, fairs, festivals, nursing homes, other cultural events. And they have a song selection mix of Southern spirits, traditional hymns, country gospels. Supposed to be really, really good. I have never heard them before, and I wish I could go, but I have another event to attend tomorrow night. But if you want to try to get tickets, you can call Kim Moore, who is our president of the Historical Society up there, at 419-927-4566, and they may have some left. I don't know. The auditorium, I think, holds about 150 people.
Okay.
But that should be a great event. And then April the 18th, also at the Melmore Town Hall, we have another event, and this is a video presentation entitled A Walk Down Memory Lane. And Kim has put together he took a movie camera, went out into the village, and interviewed several members of our community about one of their favorite memories of growing up in the Mohawk School District. So it's kind of a retrospective documentary that should be very interesting. So it's a cast of local stars telling you what it was like to live in Sycamore, the Mohawk School District over the years. It should be kind of interesting. I think it will be. I'm planning on going to that one if I can.
Well, now, Fred, you were at the bank in Sycamore.
Yes.
You were the head of that, weren't you?
Yes, 25 years I was there.
What stores remain in Sycamore?
Well, to this date, when I was at the bank, we brought in a couple of new stores. We brought in Fillmore Pharmacy, and they're still in business. I think they just celebrated their 30th anniversary here last year. But we still have H&G IGA, which is been in a grocery store that's been in Sycamore since before the turn of the 20th century.
Wow.
Started back in the late 1800s. Of course, we have a couple of bars still in town. There's a couple of restaurants, a couple of little whatnot stores. There's a ice cream store. I'm trying to think here now. We have a very nice library in town.
Well, then that big hall that's part of the fire department.
Yeah,
on that?
Fire department built the community center probably 30 years ago now. And that's down on the corner of State Route 67 and 103 at the edge of town. So there's quite a bit of business left in town. Bill Sowers still has his tree service and nursery there in town, which is a pretty big operation. I see their trucks in Marion once in a while trimming trees.
Yes. And he has always a large display at the Wyandotte
County
Fair.
Yes, at the Wyandotte County Fair, right, absolutely. And a lot of stores that have moved in, I think, since I've been active in the community, so I'm probably missing some, and I apologize for those that I'm missing. But
it's worth a
Sycamore
trip.
Is a very active little community for the size, and we're still right around 1,100 people. It's been that size for, well, I moved there in 1978. It was right at 1,100, and it's still at 1,100.
Okay.
So,
just... When you're out for a drive, those small towns, very interesting, too.
And, of course, I forgot to mention the museum.
Oh, that's right, the Mohawk.
The Mohawk Historical Society is located right downtown in beautiful Sycamore. Yeah. It's right on the corner of State Route, the intersection of State Route 31 and 103 coming in there, so you can't miss it, right on the corner. And the museum has been completely remodeled in the last couple of years. And we're, by the way, building a new building. Did you know that? I guess you should have. You probably read that in the newsletter.
That's right, yes.
We're building. We had purchased a building next to our two buildings that we already owned where the museum is, and that building had been condemned, so we tore that building down. And we're putting a new building up there that will house some additional displays and so forth.
Wow.
And that's going to have a false front on it to look like an old livery stable.
So great.
Should be kind of interesting, kind of fun. And that should be done this summer sometime. But museum is open on Saturdays. I think Kim's got the hours now going. I think he's open now from 10 to 2 on Saturdays. So if you're interested, why take a drive up that way. And stop in. I know they'd love to see it.
Oh, yes.
And it's completely wheelchair accessible now, too, by the way.
Really?
Handicapped
okay.
accessible, right.
All right.
We put a new entrance in when we did the remodel a couple of years ago. And so we have ramps that go from the one building to the other because one building was a little higher than the one. And just stop in and say hello and take a look around. A lot of history from the Mohawk School District in that museum.
And that whole area is so rich in Indian history.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, my land.
It is. Yeah. And, of course, another nice place, if you're going to make a day of it, stop at the museum in Upper Sandusky and go through the Wyandotte County Historical Society's
That's
museum,
right.
too.
Yeah.
And they have a schoolhouse on their property right adjacent to the museum that you can tour, a one-room schoolhouse. And then when you're done there, take 103 to the west out of Sycamore and intersect with State Route 53, jump on 53 and go north to McCutcheonville.
Oh, yes.
And stop at the Overland Inn.
Yes.
Which was a very famous stagecoach inn back in the early 1800s.
Yes, and I can remember the grand opening after it was reopened. The bar that all these little places had, a very narrow bar where a person could step up for a drink after a long trip on a stagecoach.
Yep. And one of the most famous people that stayed overnight there was Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
When he came through this part of the country.
Great.
Yeah. So, makes for a nice day. Oh, and I should also mention the Indian Mill.
Oh, my. Yes.
When are
they open on weekends?
You know, I'm not sure. That property is run by the Ohio History Connection, so I'm not sure when they're
That's
open.
Right.
But I would imagine that they're probably open on weekends. But that mill's been completely redone. And, of course, the cofferdam is there, and you can the wheel is still there, and obviously. A nice little place to have a picnic. You can take a picnic and picnic there. But there's always a couple of volunteers there to give you a tour and show you around, and that's also a great place to go while you're up in that wine.
Replaced the old bridge there, or they got a new bridge.
Got a new bridge, right? Yeah. Used to be an old steel bridge crossing.
But the wooden dam, I'm sure, is still there.
Exactly. Yep.
That's been replaced a couple of times.
Yep. Had a couple of drownings there.
Is that
over
right?
the years, yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think a couple of years ago, we had a couple of teenagers that lost their lives
wow.
there, kayaking or canoeing. And
I used to canoe up there as often as I could. Yeah.
You get to that dam, though, you better take your canoe out of the water and portage around. Because,
yes, I guess. That'd be quite a drop.
Too dangerous. Well, yeah. and it sucks you in. That's the problem, because
right.
that water is rolling. And,
it sure is.
And, yeah, majors. But a lot of great things to see up there. And again, if you want to join the Mohawk Historical Society, you know, it's only $10 a year to belong. And if you're over 80, they'll give you a free membership to it.
Can't beat that.
But the Mohawk Historian Newsletter comes out 6 times a year. And it's really a wonderful publication. Kim gleans newspapers from the area. Sometimes there's even some things in here from the Marion Star.
Yeah, he must spend every waking moment compiling.
He spends a lot of time compiling this. He does.
Yeah.
And, of course, he wrote a book that was compiled of a lot of these things, which
mm-hmm.
I think you got copy of that.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, he has in the issue that just came out, the March-April issue that just came out, there's a really nice story on the First National Bank of Sycamore, which was my bank, which will be celebrating our 100th anniversary this year. The bank
wow.
was founded in 1919, so 2019 is our 100th anniversary. So we'll be having some celebrations this summer. The bank opened on July 1st, so I would imagine, I haven't talked to Dean yet, but I would imagine that they're probably going to have some kind of a celebration or an open house around that date this summer. So I'll relay that information when I get the actual date and let you all know so you can stop up and tour the bank, because the bank was remodeled about 3 years ago.
Okay. Now, all the banks, of course, have tremendously heavy safes. Walk-in type.
Yes.
They must weigh tons.
Oh, my word. The bank was built around our safe.
Is that right? Oh, boy.
Yeah. The safe came, and then the bank was built around it, basically.
Is there any danger of anyone, employee walking in and it closes behind them?
No. The door is so heavy. It takes all you can do to shut the door from the outside.
Right?
And there's a steel gate that's closed during the day, so the big door itself can't shut with that steel gate shut.
And one of the purposes of all this, too, was to assure customers that their money was safe.
Exactly. And there is an airlock in the vault, too. So,
really?
I mean, if you would happen to get trapped in there, you're not going to suffocate, because there's an airlock, the emergency airlock that you can pull that you'll get air.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
so
that
was a feature that was built in when the bank was built. The current building that we're in was built in 1961 and was, as I said, was remodeled. Well, let's see. This is, I think, the third summer since the remodeling. But originally, the bank was in down the street from where it is now, in what is now the restaurant in Sycamore.
Oh,
that
okay.
used to be the original bank.
And to move the safe must have been something else.
Well, it was a different safe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the safe that was in the old building was one of those stand-up safes that you could move with several people.
Oh, I know
but
what you mean, yes.
It wasn't something you're going to pick up and move.
Not something you're going to walk
but
in.
But the one that's in the current building was built in.
Yeah,
was
okay.
a built-in safe.
Well,
and, of course, the old clock that hung out above the bank when it was in the old restaurant building and then hung above the bank when we built it in 1961 is now located over top of the Mohawk Historical Society's museum.
We're going to break right now. We'll be right back.
Hey, Scott, I bet you cannot guess what my favorite type of animal is.
Cats?
No, dogs. Now, can you guess what my favorite type of dog is?
Black Lab.
No, Golden Retriever. Was there any doubt?
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt US Kids, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back once again with Fred Malone. Okay, Fred, what else is new?
Well, that's interesting. You were on off air there. Were you telling me that your father had taken movies of
Mexico.
Old Mexico, Little Mexico, they call it, which is up in Wyandotte County, just outside of Sycamore, in
1939.
You know, is the film still?
It's regular old film.
I just wonder, it would be interesting if we could get that converted over to some new media.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know Kim would love to have a copy of that.
I've got hundreds of feet of film that I need to... At times, I had some of it converted to VHS, which is no longer used. But I would like to get the whole... My dad's whole collection onto DVD or something. Because there's so much history in it.
Let me talk to Kim about that, because he bought some apparatus that allows him to do a lot of that. Yes, let me talk to him about that. And I'll get back with you on that, because I would love to have a copy of that for our museum up in Sycamore.
Really would
be great. And then, you know, to be able to have that all done for you and put over on DVDs so you can watch that stuff, that's great.
There's so much history.
But anyway, that's kind of what's going on up in Sycamore right now. And as I said, the museum is open on Saturdays now from 10 to 2. So if you're interested, you can call ahead. You can always call Kim at 419-927-4566. 419-927-4566. And they'll open the museum up special for you to take a tour of it, even if it's not open.
Are there any Indian artifacts in there?
Yes, we do. excuse me. The Hoffert brothers, Bill and Jim Hoffert, have a collection on loan in there of some of the things that they've collected over the years. So, yeah, there's a nice... You want to see a really nice collection of Indian artifacts, go to the museum in Upper Sandusky.
Really?
They have a fabulous collection of artifacts. A lot of them came from what they call Reber's Bottom,
which is
right down over the hill. You know where that is, off of 199.
Right.
But they have a fabulous collection of things at the Wyandotte County Museum in Upper Sandusky,
And that area is so rich in Indian history.
Well, it is. And of course, if you go a few blocks over to the old Mission Cemetery, the old Mission Church is still there, and a lot of history there. Reverend John Stewart buried there, and several Indians buried there were part of the Wyandotte tribe.
Wasn't Reverend Stewart a Methodist?
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. One of the first to...
Friend of Reverend Finley, who traveled through this area too as well. In fact, Finley did ministered to the Wyandotte Indians at the church there in Upper Sandusky. And was a friend of Tecumseh's brother.
Now, in Bucyrus, we had Finley Hill, which is the old Route 98 hill by the hospital. But the current generation had never heard of Finley Hill.
You know, Reverend Finley traveled the entire western half of Ohio from Cincinnati all the way to Perrysburg on horseback.
Really?
He was a circuit rider. And I have, I think I have all of his diaries. He wrote diaries throughout his entire career of circuit riding. And I have all of his diaries, one's about his work with the Ohio Penitentiary, one about his work with the Indians, living on the in the wilderness. He was a fabulous individual and kept such good diaries.
Well, that's important.
Yeah, such good diaries.
Can you imagine what it was like being a circuit rider back in that era?
I mean...
Might have been an Indian around the next tree.
Well, there was one that traveled through Marion quite frequently. His name was L. Nathan Gavitt, G-A-V-I-T-T. And he mentions, and I have a copy of one of his diaries. His is called Crumbs from My Saddlebag. And he mentions staying with the True family.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Uh-huh. No kidding.
Uh-huh.
Henry True's family.
Yeah. Spending the night here on his way someplace and staying with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so history is a fascinating thing, Charlie, and if we can get more people interested in history, and that's why it's so important that people support the Marion County Historical Society, because we are the keepers of your history. And if we have to close our doors, that's all going to be lost.
Oh, my.
That's all going to be lost.
You know, an interesting thing, the most popular thing maybe on the Internet in this area is growing up in Marion.
All
the pictures.
Oh, yeah. I guess that just has tremendous following. Well, and Brandy was saying in our board meeting yesterday that we have something like 3,000 followers on our Facebook page alone.
Wow.
On the Marion County History's Facebook page, yeah.
And I entered the one in Bucyrus, too. And I asked a question. If anyone knew of the steam car that was built by Bill Merling back in the 50s, and I got an answer right away. Oh, sure. We used to race him, and I tried to race him, but he left us all behind. That steam car was so fast. But he was also, they told me, a repairman for the museum in Dearborn, Michigan.
Oh, really?
He took care of the steam engines.
Yeah, Henry Ford, yeah.
But he used to race us kids back in the 50s.
That's amazing. Well, you know, a lot of communities had car productions. They were doing car productions.
Yes.
Tiffin made cars.
Yeah. I think Marion made one, didn't they?
I think so. I've never seen it or seen a picture of it, but I think they did. But they have a Tiffin car in the museum up in Seneca County.
Is that right?
Yeah.
My grandfather worked on the old Elmore car.
Yep.
And there was an Elmore in the Cedar Point Museum for a long time.
Yeah, right. I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
I do. I remember seeing that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Well, he striped buggies. I don't know what he did mechanically on the Elmore.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, like I said, history is fascinating, and there's so much to learn about history. In fact, I brought a list of, I want to kind of throw some books out that people might be, these are some books that I have read since I was here the last time in January that are very, very interesting. The first one's called The Field of Blood. It was written by a woman by the name of Joanne Freeman. Violence in the Congress and the Road to the Civil War, called The Field of Blood. Now, basically what this book is about the goings-on in Congress that were taking place in the years preceding the Civil War. Now, we think the Congress in Washington's bad now. This book talks about the things that took place on the floor of Congress. The canings, the fights, the fist fights.
No kidding.
The shootings, the stabbings. Congressmen doing this. Congressmen doing this, right. Yeah. And one of the biggest antagonizers in the whole picture of things during this time period was John Quincy Adams.
No kidding.
John Quincy Adams is the only person to have ever been president of the United States, and then after he served his term as president, he was elected to Congress and served terms in Congress. Wow. And he delighted in starting things in Congress and then sitting back and watching what would happen.
No kidding.
Yeah, congressmen, they would cane each other on the floor of the Congress. There were shots fired. Very interesting book called The Field of Blood. Another one I read was called The President Will See You Now. This is written by a lady by the name of Peggy Grand. The President Will See You Now, really recent book, I think just published in the last year or so. She was the aide to Ronald Reagan in his years after he left the White House, in his office in his museum out in California. And she writes about his final years. Very, very interesting book. It gives you a real insight on how kind an individual Ronald Reagan really was.
How great a man he really was. Had he served in any office before he became president?
Governor of California.
Oh, okay.
He had two terms as governor in California.
Okay.
Yeah. But this book called The President Will See You Now, a very, very interesting read, and it will open your eyes a lot about Ronald Reagan.
Wow.
New book just came out last year called President McKinley, Architect of the American Century by Robert Mary, M-E-R-R-Y. A lot of new insight on McKinley's early life and a lot of insight on his term and a portion of a term as President of the United States and the good things that he'd done. A lot is not known about President McKinley, and a lot of people don't consider him much of a president, but he was really one of our better presidents.
Now, how is he related to you?
He and I share a grandfather.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And our grandfather is buried up in the cemetery in Chatfield.
That's right.
At the church. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He was a Revolutionary War soldier. His name was David McKinley.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then the last one I wanted to mention is called The First Conspiracy. This is a very interesting book. The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. And this is written by a fellow by the name of Brad Meltzer, who, if you have satellite TV, Brad Meltzer has a show on TV on one of the networks about history.
Hmm.
The interesting thing about this is not many people know that there was a plot to kill Washington.
No, I never heard of anything.
During what was going on during the Revolutionary War. But the other interesting thing I got from this book was, you know, it's always been kind of talked about that the Pinkerton Detective Agency were the first people that served to be bodyguards to the president, and that was Lincoln.
Oh, really?
And they always say that the Secret Service was derived from the Pinkerton Detective Service providing service to Lincoln when he was coming from Springfield into Baltimore and then into Washington, D.C., because there was a plot to assassinate mm-hmm. him before he even took the oath of office. But in this book, The First Conspiracy, in 1775, there was so much turmoil going on with the formation of the Continental Army and what was happening with Britain and the British Army being over in this country, that a special guard was formed called the Life Guard that were hand-selected by George Washington to be his bodyguards.
Well, no kidding.
So actually, the Secret Service started with George Washington.
Yeah. Well, that sure is interesting.
But all four of these books, if you're interested in history, read any one of the four, and I think you'll get a new perspective on a lot of different things. But this field of blood about all that went on in Congress up until the start of the Civil War, between the anti-slavery groups and the faction from the South, at this time there were over 14 parties, 14 individual political parties represented in the Congress.
Is that right?
14 different parties.
Now, I just heard somewhere this morning, too, about, once again, the fact that Republicans were against slavery and Democrats were mm-hmm. in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
And did that carry – how does that carry over?
Or well, I don't know. I really don't know whether it does or not. But see, there were more than one Democrat and more than one Republican party during this time frame prior to the Civil War.
Uh-huh.
You had the Jacksonian Democrats, and then you had the Dixiecrats, the Dixie Democrats,
yeah.
and then there were several different factions of the Republican Party, and then, of course, Whigs were still around. You had the Know-Nothing Party. I wish I brought the book with me because I could have read off some of these parties. Maybe I'll bring it the next time. But over 14 different parties.
Really?
In
comparison to what we have today.
Basically two.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, basically
that's
two.
That's something, yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I thought I'd share that with your listeners because history is something you're always learning about.
Oh,
you're
yes.
always learning about. My wife gets upset at me because I keep a stack of books beside my beside my bed.
Well,
I
have a good example. I mean, I'm 84 years old now, and my history, you know, my active years go way back before a lot of people were born.
Exactly.
And
exactly. History is every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
And all the time I was in the institutions here recently, no one had ever heard of me. But if you went back another 20 years, it would have been different.
Absolutely. Well, and that was one of the reasons why the staff at the museum decided that we needed to bring some history from the 60s into the museum
Good
for
idea.
This year, because there are a lot of people walking around this earth today that weren't around in the 60s
That's
and
right.
don't know anything about the history of the 60s.
It's hard to realize,
they don't know
but
about,
yes.
you know,
yeah.
about John Glenn.
We're
going to
break here. We'll be right back.
Charlie, do you know because of you, more Marian residents know that flipping the bird was invented in 320 BC than in any other county in America?
Yes, but I didn't tell you the rest of the story.
What's that?
At 320 BC, in 1 minute, the fat lip was invented.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
/180/111, and I had a stroke.
I couldn't speak or walk.
150/90, and I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent. Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back once again to Fred Malone. We have about 14 minutes to go here. Now, if you have any questions about Marion County, Marion City history, give us a buzz, 740-333-9944. I'm getting froggish.
Well, as I say it off air there, Charlie, that was one of the reasons why the staff at the museum thought this was a great time to kind of feature history from the 60s, because there are a lot of people, you know, that are walking around today that weren't around in the 60s, or if they were, they were young and don't remember anything about it. So, you know, by bringing back what some of the clothing looked like and what TVs looked like and what families' living rooms looked like and what people did for fun and the people that lived then that made history, people like John Glenn and Marilyn Meskey and Elvis and people like that, LBJ, and how much of an important impact that Lyndon Johnson had when he was president. You know, taking over for John Kennedy when he was assassinated, and then the war years and choosing not to seek re-election when he could have. It's just an amazing time.
Can you imagine becoming president in an instant, and all of a sudden here you've got all this ahead of you, and you... What do you do?
Well, and of course, you know, the vice presidency has always been considered, at least up until recently, has always been considered a pigeonhole job.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You usually, you know, it's like when McKinley was looking for a vice president after Hobart died, Hannah says, you know, let's get Teddy Roosevelt. That'll push him back in the background. We'll never have to hear from him again. So what happens? Yeah. McKinley gets assassinated, and guess who comes president?
Yeah.
You just never know.
That's
you just
right.
never know. So, but I think that's another reason why people need to try to get to Night at Heritage Hall this weekend and see those characters, interact with them. And,
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But you see, the '60s too. '60s seemed like there was so much going on in my life in the '60s. I had a daughter that was born in '63, and that was the first year that you could buy of these milk bottles with a plastic insert and a rubber top, to where you didn't have to heat the bottles, boil them in water.
Yeah, and a lot of new innovations. Microwaves were starting to make.
And disposable diapers.
Disposable diapers, yeah.
If you remember, folks, back in those days, on a hot summer day, the mother carried a diaper bag with her, and lo and behold, if she opened it up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
hot,
yeah. It's amazing when you stop and think, where did the last 50 years go?
Yeah, really.
You know, I mean, really.
Oh my!
I graduated from high school in 1968, and that was quite a turmoil year. Riots in the streets, and the Democratic National Convention, and what a time!
And I graduated in 1952, and that was the year Harry Truman was elected. Wow.
On his own, yeah.
And our super highways came about.
Got to correct you. Harry Truman was elected in 48.
Oh, 48.
Eisenhower was elected in 52.
That's right. And Eisenhower's, 309, it was Route 30 South, and then it became 309. It used to go through Caledonia. And the remnants are still there. But the highway was straightened out.
Well, of course, you know, he's responsible for the interstate highway system.
Yeah, that's it.
Because when he was in the Army, he was supposed to get some Army equipment from one part of the country to another part of the country, and had to travel over these roads that were horrible.
Oh, my.
And so when he became president, one of the first things on his plate was to create the interstate highway system.
Yeah, right.
To help transportation across the country.
And it worked.
And it worked.
And now we've got to maintain them.
And now we have to maintain them. And now our gas is going to cost us 18 cents more a gallon.
Now, you just wonder if the governor can push through the 18 cents. We probably need it for all the bridges.
I'm sure we do. If you travel around the state much at all, especially on a lot of the secondary highways, they're in deplorable condition.
Oh, yes.
And the bridges, a lot of the bridges that we're crossing have been up for in excess of 100 years.
That's
and,
right.
You know, steel can only last so long.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I'm sure that the 18 cents a gallon is needed. No one wants to pay it. No one wants to pay higher gas prices. I understand that. But if you want to be safe on the highways, you're going to have to pony up and
That's
bite
right.
the bullet.
Exactly. Now you wonder, too, what do the electric cars have to pay.
Well, I heard the other day that they were kicking around in the one bill that the Ohio House, I think, had either having hearings on or already passed it. They were talking about $100 or $200 yearly charge.
Oh, that's right.
For those types of vehicles since they're not using gas.
Mm, right.
I don't know. You at some point in time, we have to realize that things don't last forever. Your house doesn't last forever. You got to keep repairs up on it.
Boy.
So it's the same way with the highways.
Now the trucking industry, having to pay more, you're going to have to up their freightage costs.
Yeah, sure, it'll make an increase on everything because there's still a lot of things that are sent by truck. You know, a lot of things you see sent by rails today aren't nearly as much as they were back in the 60s, for instance.
That's right, yeah.
So it's going to affect everybody down the road.
We're going to pay
more for commodities, yep. Right? Absolutely. Yep, for sure.
Okay, 11:52 is the time. And what else do you have, Fred?
Well, I think that just about covered everything that was going on at the Marion County Historical Society, at least in the very near future, in the same way with the Mohawk Historical Society. We've got lunch with the presidents, but that's not coming up until May, so I'll talk about that next month. You can buy tickets for all those events now. They have tickets available down at the Heritage Fall Hall for the luncheon with the presidents, also with the First Ladies luncheon, which won't be held until August, but you can buy tickets now. They've already got the tickets printed up. We've got the speakers set for those two luncheons, and we'll talk about those more at the next time I'm here.
But the big thing coming up, of course, is this weekend.
Night at Heritage Hall this weekend, 7 to 9 on Friday night and Saturday night. Park behind the building or across the street at the church lot or behind the old Y or across the street at the Huntington Bank that's no longer there and walk across the street to where the awning is and come in that door. We'll open those doors at 6:30 and you can start your tour at 7. Want to mention a couple things coming up at Malabar here in the remaining time that
we have. Yes.
Things are starting to gear up over there. We just had our big Valentine's Day bash in February, which was a huge success this year. We cut it back to just one weekend and did four seatings instead of doing two weekends. And we actually had a bigger profit than we did when we were doing two weekends.
Wow.
So we sold out at all four seatings. We ended up grossing, I think, somewhere around $12,000, and we netted about $9,500. We had over $1,600 of income on raffle tickets alone. So very, very good event for us. And all that money, of course, goes to the Malabar Farm Foundation Incorporated, which is a 501c3 arm of the park that currently our big project, of course, as I've talked about before, is the restoration of all the artwork in the house, which is an ongoing project. And we just recently finished, I think before I was I don't know whether I talked about this in January or not, but we just finished putting in all new ultraviolet blinds.
Right, you mentioned that, yeah.
On every window in the house, which was 89 coverings, 89 different window coverings in the house. And that was a $24,000 project, so it takes money to do things.
And what does that prevent?
That prevents the ultraviolet rays from the sun filtering into the house and destroying the artwork, the carpets, the textiles, anything in the house, right?
Keep that in mind, folks, that you don't have those shades.
And, well, one thing you can do in your own house is convert over to LED. Incandescent lamps also put out ultraviolet rays. So we did that at the farm, too, and that was about a $1,500 project for us.
What are those curlicue bulbs put out?
It depends. If they're LEDs, they won't. But if they're still an old incandescent bulb, they will.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, that was about a $1,500 project. But between those two things, we are now totally protected from any ultraviolet rays, which might destroy any of the artwork or the antiques or artifacts in the
house. And you've had some of the artwork restored?
We've had 31 paintings done and new draperies recreated and some some prints done. So far, we spent about $125,000.
Now, what did Brumfield like in paintings? Was there a theme?
Well, no, not really. He had kind of a wide range of likes, and I think a lot of it depended on what people at the time told him was a good buy. I think sometimes he bought things because he thought, right, they might be an investment. We do have two Grandma Moses in the house that were they were gifts from Grandma Moses because Louis had written the introduction to her autobiography, and she thought he'd done such a nice job, she gifted him with two paintings. So we have two Grandma Moses. But a lot of the artwork is eclectic. There was some South American artists that he bought. There was several artists from Europe that he bought because they spent 20 years in France. So we have some paintings that came from there. And there were some local artists. There was a gentleman, by the name of George Biddle from Lucas, that we have three or four pieces of George Biddle's work in the house. So there's some local people that he bought artwork from, too. So it's a pretty wide range of artistry. Some very, very, very famous people, and then some not-so-famous people that did the artwork in the house. In April is our first barn dance, and that's going to be April the 27th. That takes place during the Mohawk Wildlife Weekend, and there's a lot of things going on that particular weekend. There's a wildflower hike. There's a wild edibles walk. There's a vernal pool study, and that's pretty interesting. Have you ever been on one of those vernal pool studies?
Yes.
That's being led by one of our naturalists. And the foundation bought several microscopes last year, so now that they'll have microscopes available for people to look at the little things that come out of the water in the vernal pools.
And you'd be surprised what comes out of a vernal pool.
And a vernal pool, for those people that don't know, is a pool that is formed simply because there was a depression in the ground, and either snow or rainwater collects in these depressions over the winter or the spring.
Yeah.
And different animals develop in there.
That's right. It's just amazing.
It is. It really is.
And we have a couple of vernal pools that James Anderson talks about.
Yeah, out at the tall grass trails, right? Yeah. There's also a mushroom hike. There's a scavenger hunt for the family. There's a birding hike, and we'll have coffee and so forth available. And this is in part, some of this is being sponsored by Mohican State Park, which is adjacent to us. So things will be held in both places. But that's what's going to be at the barn dance will be that night at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
So that's what's coming up at the park. And I'll be back, of course, in April to talk about things that are going to be taking place in May. And we've got a lot of exciting things going on there as well this year.
And be sure to tell your kids that Elvis will be at the night at the museum.
And John Glenn,
yes. And this could... this could bring about a lot more people.
Well, you know, there aren't any more famous people that come out of Ohio than John Glenn. I mean, he's one of the most famous. Of course, we have President Harding and we have President McKinley and, you know, the birthplace of Ohio presidents. But some guy that was able to be the first person to orbit the Earth, that was a feat, not knowing whether he was going to come back or not.
I treasure the day that I interviewed John Glenn. I had him come in our little van that I broadcast from, and that was a thrill. And then to get his, he sent me a letter after that thanking me. And, you know, that's going a long way.
It is, and I'm looking up on the wall above your head right now. There's a picture of John Glenn with Mary Ellen Withrow.
Oh, yes.
And Annie Glenn right in front.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Well, we're slowly coming to the end of our program for today. My guest has been Fred Malone, and Fred is just... full of everything when it comes to history and whatever. Wow. Okay, so stay tuned. Fred will be back next month on the third Wednesday. You're listening to WWGH.
You're listening to WWGH Radio, LP, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place, 107.1 FM. From Charlie Evers.
You know, you could come in handy, too, with that electricity. If we have problems with our transmitter, which is above you, all you'd have to do is raise your hands and energize our transmitter.
To formerly of WNCI, Weasel Boy, is that true? I've never asked that question on air before, by the way, but...
I can tell. With it,
I wasn't even sure how to word it.
When the way your arms got going, I never asked anybody that question.
I wouldn't even know. To 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. Do you think he needed her after that primary election?
Yes, and I think I go back to Abraham Lincoln when it's the, you bring your enemies close.
That was, had you ever seen a primary like that in your life?
You mean Abraham Lincoln?